back to the bin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am here once again. You know, it seems like every time you're on, it's, oh, we've waited too long, it's been too long, whatever. It's been too long, and Chris Tyler's back, everybody.
Hey, somebody likes me.
Yeah, I think there's a few people who like you. Probably outnumber the people who don't like you.
They have poor taste, so...
Well, that's okay.
I appreciate it.
I think that's a given, but that's besides the point. How you been, Chris?
Hanging in there, you know. Little of this, little of that.
You know, I was looking, and I knew we were going to hit the next Sleepwalker issue today, and I reviewed it, and I was saying, I don't remember. Like the lead up to this story, which is okay because Back to the Bins technically is supposed to be, you know, you're reviewing the one issue as a standalone issue. But I mean, we have been doing the series ever so slowly.
Yeah.
So I usually remember them, but this one I had to look. It's been over 2 years since we did the last issue.
I didn't even flip back. I said, you know what? I'm just going to grab it like I was grabbing it off the spinner rack. And we'll see what happens.
Well, there's something to be said for that. Like I said, that's technically the theory of the show anyway. It's supposed to be random comic books. We're not supposed to be doing full series, you know, but we do full series anyway.
Yeah. Well,
even if they take, you know, 20 years to do
them. Hey, you know, it's something to be said for job security.
Yeah, that's true. So, I went back and I really didn't remember. I didn't have time to listen to the previous episode. I just kind of flipped quickly through issue 13. And then we get to issue 14, which is where we are today. But as always, I leave it up to you. Do you want to do your issue first? Or do you want to do my issue first?
Why not? Because this issue is pretty much just a lot of punchy, punchy run. So it shouldn't take too long to synopsize. But before we synopsize it, let's go with the information. So it's Sleepwalker number 14, the cover date of July 92. It was on the racks in May of 92. Cover price $1.25. The editor was Don Daly. The writer was Bob Budiansky. The penciler is Brett Blevins. The inker, Mike Manley. Letterer, Richard Starkings. And colorist, Marie Javins. I think that's just Color Craft now, right? That was Richard Starkings. He formed Color Craft, didn't he? Or maybe I'm wrong. Oh, no. No, never mind. You know what? Ignore me. Edit this out. I sound like an idiot. The title of this issue is The Color of Pain, which is part 2 of 4 of the color blindness storyline. Our cover has, what's her name? Sarah Slate. Selena Slate. Yes, you can tell it's a comic book character, the double S's. It has her in her new guise of Spectra, which she hasn't called herself yet, but she's there, nude, ensconced in flowing rainbow swirls, holding a gem up with light emitting out of it, with one red beam causing fire and one blue beam causing ice on our super buff Sleepwalker. And we pick up immediately from the last issue in the optics lab of Dr. Charles Warren. Sleepwalker is hurt. And we have another semi-nude drawing of Spectra. I am not complaining. She decides that she's going to have a little fun, declaring that she is now light. And she's super powerful. She's there with her junkie boyfriend. What's his name? Garth. She decides she'll actually save his life and not allow anything to happen to him. The Dr. Warren there, he's saying, Sleepwalker, I'm going to try to help you. Because I know that the light is causing you to have it's like an interaction, like a drug. And yeah, Sleepwalker isn't hearing it because, you know, he's trying to get another fix. And apropos of everything going on in the issue, he flies over a couple of winos, if you can even use that term now, in the street, looking disheveled. Visual storytelling. By this point, Spectre's kind of had enough of her boyfriend. She blasts him with some light. leaving him on the ground like the junkie that she says that he is. The next several issues are Sleepwalker trying to grab a fix of that sweet, sweet gem and Spectra and he fighting. That continues on. Let's see, what do we got next? More fight. Jesus, a lot of this issue is just fighting, which I'm not complaining about. But at a certain point, Sleepwalker, under the control or the influence of the gem, decides that if I can't get back to the dreamscape, I'm going to make this place look like the dreamscape so that I'll be happy, which is not good. He dives into Rick's mind and tells Rick's inner conscious dream child, hey, knock Rick out because he woke up and I got to get back out there and find Spectre and get some more sweet, sweet gem high. And Rick's inner child says, no, I did that for you once before. It's too dangerous. Not happening again. We cut to Tolliver Smith, who was in a few issues earlier. Sent that whole squad after Sleepwalker, the Office of Insufficient Evidence, which is just a great comic book name. I'll reiterate it. And he says it's time to make an arrest. Sleepwalker is full-blown junkie mode right at this point, and he forces Rick to fall asleep, which is not good. Rick is basically out cold at this point, kind of like he's in a coma. And a couple of passers-by on the street walk by, and Sleepwalker begs them for help, and they run out of there because Sleepwalker's super scary. He doesn't know who can help, so he goes back to Dr. Fong. Yeah, if I can even remember who that is. I can't. Sorry. He says, I need you to help me. And we end the issue with the Office of Insufficient Evidence rolling up to the Baxter building and meeting with the Fantastic Four, who appear to be ready to lend assistance to the Office of Insufficient Evidence. There you go. So, yes, this is very much a middle chapter with a lot of action. And you're muted.
Yes, and now I am not. There's a lot of action, but there is enough in the way of subtext here to give this story a little gravitas, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something... I mean, superheroes or super characters dealing with untoward influences, it's not the first time it's been done.
It's not, but it's you know what? If we just go to the Marvel paradigm, you know, the heroes have to have some sort of fatal flaw. And it started out they were like ridiculously simple. You know, Tony Stark had his heart condition, and if his energy went too low, he could die. Thor needed to have his hammer because if he didn't have it for 60 seconds, he could turn into his human identity. Things, you know, that it's almost like, you know, really, that's their weakness. To have your hero, your titular hero, be someone who is already looked at, you know, kind of the X-Men model of trying to save a world that fears him. Yeah. And then to give him effectively a drug addiction.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's pretty, you know, pretty out there. And I kind of like that aspect of it.
Oh, I do too. I mean, this book is bugged. I mean, it's part 60s, you know, Marvel era craziness and part early 90s, we're trying to do things somewhat seriously now, which is part of the reason why I like the book. Yeah, I mean, the heroes having feet of clay has always been part of the Marvel mode. And I mean, this is a pretty leveling thing because, I mean, it doesn't matter what your situation in life is. I think we all know someone who, for whatever reason, can't get out of their own way, whether it's, you know, stuff in their head or, you know, chemical, whatever it might be. I mean, everybody, you know, in the world today kind of knows somebody like that or has interacted with somebody like that. So seeing this and seeing how far Sleepwalker is willing to go to chase the pleasure from that gemstone is, it wasn't something I was expecting as a 12-year-old when I was reading it. Because for the most part, the issues up to that point have been rather, I'll say, goofy and zany. Mm-hmm. So this was a little more realistic. And it's partially a product of the time, like this book is, that I always mention. Yeah, but it didn't bother me. It's just, it was not a swerve that I was expecting, and it leaves on a cliffhanger of, oh boy, look what Sleepwalker did, and how are we going to fix this?
You know, it's, this is a 1992 book, and if I try to take myself back to that era and earlier, and, you know, the mindset as it was as compared to now, I think, you know, society has become more understanding of addiction and all of that. And I was a little harsh at that age, and I probably am still a little harsh, harsher than I should be towards addicts, because I mean, I know people who've had issues with drugs or alcohol, and yeah, I have sympathy for them. And I certainly have sympathy for the battle once it exists. Once you have the addiction, I totally get it. But I remember, like, in the 80s when they designated this as a disease as opposed to, you know, a weakness.
Yeah.
And my comment back then, and keep in mind, this is the age, you know, when I was in my 20s, so probably in my most alcohol related, state of my life. But I used to say, well, but I accept that it's a disease, but it's the only disease that you can beat with willpower, you know? And that was, I think, an overly simplistic way of looking at it, I have to say.
Yeah. And I'm right there with you. As a teenager, I certainly thought the same way. I mean, the cards on the table. My wife is an alcoholic. She's sober almost 17 years, but it's a process, and it still can be a struggle. It doesn't matter how many years of sobriety that you have. I mean, once it's triggered, it's a part of you. So,
yeah, again, the battle is another matter of, you know, falling for the addiction, and certainly falling into the addiction is certainly this, you know, life gives you all different reasons. And I was not going to bring up your personal relationship.
And she's very open about it, so I don't feel any hesitation.
And when I've met her, and when we've been at events together, which was usually at Dario's house, she's shown, you know, that she can be around people without doing it, and, you know, she has the willpower and she fights it, and God bless her. I can't criticize in any way, shape, or form. And the problem, I guess, with the addiction coming upon people is you don't see it coming. It's not like you say to yourself, hey, you know what? Yeah. If I keep following on the road I'm on now, I'm going to be an addict. You know, I mean, yeah. I think that happens to some people, but I think that's a rarity. I think more often than not, you have the addiction, and then you have to come to grips with the fact that, hey, I have a problem, which is probably the biggest step coming to that realization.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no. My best friend finally admitted that he has an issue, and he's sober about 2 years now. But it gets to that point where you have to hit that rock bottom. You know, maybe Rick going into a coma is going to be Sleepwalker's rock bottom.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. You know, and again, you know, I know of people who've gone to rehabilitation facilities, and or at least the whole problem that I said is, unless you sit there and say, I have a problem, I want to be cured, and you mean it, rehabilitation isn't going to, it's not going to stick.
No,
it's going through a process that means nothing. Because if you think, oh, I really don't have a problem, I can control this, which I think is the addict's line, I think then you're not going to get healed. And I think healed is the wrong word. It makes it sound like a faith healer.
I mean, unfortunately, without going into specifics, I can 100% verify that is the case for somebody who is in the throes of addiction. Until you have that realization, it's totally irrelevant to try to do anything. This is a weighty subject for a book, a show about funny books.
Well, exactly. And that's why I found this book to be fascinating, because it is such a weighty subject that was presented in it. Yeah. And I think Sleepwalker has been from the start. Let's bring this back to a little bit more fun, because this has been a tough conversation, and I apologize to you.
That's fine with me.
Into it. It's been a more serious book. This has not been a book that's been geared towards, you know, 8-year-olds. This has probably been, you know, 14 and up.
I would say. I mean, once you start delving into the metaphysical at all, alternate realms and all other dimensions and nightmares and things like that. And Rick is, I mean, he's college aged, you know, I forget what year of college he is, but he's on the older side of, you know, he wouldn't even, you know, Peter Parker was 15 when he got Spider-Man powers. Like,
yeah,
Rick is already older than that with his own kind of adult life going on and trying to deal with, you know, tuition for school and living on his own and stuff like that. So you can push it a little bit more. And I mean, and from what I remember of the series, it does go to maybe not as dark a place as this. It does get, you know, the sci-fi and horror still kind of permeates it, but it's not like this. It's very much more grand, you know, superhero stuff going forward. But yeah, and again, I also just, I mean, that's a product of the time though too. I mean, the 90s, because what, I mean, the you know, the issues of Spider-Man without the comics code, I mean, that was, I mean, how many years past that are we now? 13, 14 years past that?
No, more than that.
More than that.
I think that issue was in the early 70s. Okay. Maybe around 71, 72, somewhere yeah. around there.
And it's still, I mean, and that was still the outlier, because, I mean, books were still getting printed. I mean, this issue's got the comics code, you know, right next to the corner box. So it was still something that, you know, the big two definitely weren't treading into, you know, without it being like, drugs are bad, drugs are bad, drugs are bad. Anybody that does drugs is bad. You know, the very much the comics code guidelines there. So, I mean, for this book to tackle it is saying something. And this is, I mean, and this is right before the midst of all the real big, I mean, this is right before we start getting to like the Infinity Gauntlet and the Infinity War and everything, you know, when that was the big selling stuff. So,
no. See, I could see this as something that somebody could read just for entertainment.
Yeah.
Unless you're looking at it more closely. And then you say, oh, there's more to it than that. You know, there's more depth than that. Where, so, you know, like, I don't think you have to go into that addiction point of view.
No.
And again, you know, maybe that wasn't the, I think that was the thought process when Bob Budinski wrote this.
Well, yeah, because you could have easily had the gem having zero effect on Sleepwalker, and then it just becomes, I need to stop this newest villain.
Yeah, and I enjoyed this issue for that reason. It made me think. It made me, you know, made my mind go to, okay, a superhero that's got an addiction issue, are they going to delve with this? Is this going to be something that's going to go on? I mean, this is a 4-issue arc.
Yes.
So is it something that by the end of the 4th issue, it's resolved and, you know, end of story, you know, or is it something that shows a weakness?
Demon in a Bottle was what? 1-2 issues? I mean, so let's be real here. So, you know,
but Demon in a Bottle was 1 or 2 issues, but then the fact that Tony Stark had a drinking problem stayed for years and years and years. In fact, the problem is that I see is that when these, you know, when these characters have legs, which unfortunately Sleepwalker really didn't, then there's going to be hundreds and hundreds of issues. And how many times are you going to say, oh yeah, you know, there's an addiction problem here. Or Hank Pym beats his wife. You know, I mean,
that's the most blown out thing. Like the modern writers took that garbage and ran with it. And it's such baloney. It's like, really? Mm-hmm. I mean, you got a founding member of the Avengers and you're going to do him dirty like that.
Ridiculous. The problem is they, you know, they wanted to give him some, you know, a flaw, and then they gave him one that people won't forgive him for.
Yeah, like that's the, I mean, come on. It's, I know, I, well, I'm not going to get on my old man soapbox about that. I'm not talking about.
Do you know, I am like permanently affixed to my old man soapbox now.
I kind of am too. And I'm trying not to be because I recognize it, and I recognize some of its age, some of it's me just being a grump, and some of it's me just having my line in the sand on certain things. And that's just who I am. And I think everybody has that. Like I'm aware of it. I'm trying to loosen up on some stuff, but sometimes it's hard, man.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know what? There are times, quite frankly, especially when the wave against you, I don't want to make this political, but the wave against you feels so strong sometimes that it almost makes me want to dig my heels in more.
I'll feel that way, but I'm not going to go out and broadcast it. Cause I also, at the end of the day, I'm just like, you know what, at the end of the day, if we're talking, just don't be a dick.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I'll try not to either.
So.
I don't alienate anyone because their politics disagree with mine. I may disagree with them, but I see no reason why I can't be friends with somebody who I disagree with.
That's how I feel, unfortunately.
A lot of people don't seem to feel that way.
Yeah, which, I mean, just makes life really boring and turns everything into real life football, which is not something I'm interested in.
So, but from the perspective of real life, I thought this issue presented some interesting thoughts.
Yeah.
And, you know, a villain that was, a villain that was different from what we've seen in other things, especially, you know, the deconstructing of the heroes. So I like that. I like that Budiansky seems to want to take it somewhere.
Yeah.
I thought the artwork in this issue was pretty top notch for the most part, except I don't like the way he's drawing Sleepwalker as having this amorphous body that sometimes he's like, yeah, you know, usually pumped, and sometimes he's as thin as a rail. I think the character looks more effective when he's as thin as a rail.
I agree.
If they added something to the storyline that his body is amorphous and it changes, you know, over time and he can't control that, I'd kind of be on board with that. But that
one line would have no prized out all of the times that happens, or why they felt the need to push the art into the 90s direction where everybody needs to be a slab. Clearly Sleepwalker's powers are not derived from his muscularity or his vascularity. Let's just put it that way. He's an extra dimensional being. I mean, I like when Superman is portrayed as a slab. I just think it looks cool, but Christopher Reeve, in shape guy, he wasn't a slab like Henry Cavill. I still bought it because his powers are not because of his muscles. So, yeah, I really like, as simple as design as it is, and the art and the coloring is doing a lot of the work, Spectre's design is interesting. It's bright. It's extremely bright compared to how kind of gritty and dark this book can be, because a lot of it is at nighttime. So she stands out. And I mean, there's no Barry in the lead. I mean, she gets her powers and she's instantly saying, I'm Spectra, Mistress of Light. Come at me, bro. And I have no problem with that. Not everything needs to be, super detailed. If I got superpowers, I'd probably get myself a cool name right away too. You know, like, wait, come on. What are my powers? Okay. Let me make it have something to do with that. Like,
oh no, I'd be right towards the Mr. Fantastic, I mean, I've brought up that bit a lot. You know, McDonald bit about the Fantastic Four giving them their names. Have you ever heard that?
No, I have not.
Seek it out on YouTube. It's hilarious. Right. They do it with like a cartoon, and it's like, you know, okay, he could light on fire, so he's the Human Torch. She could become invisible. She's the Invisible Girl. I'm kind of a big lumpy thing, so you call me the Thing. You're a stretchy rubber band guy, so shouldn't your name be Stretchy Rubber Band Guy? No, Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'm going for that. If I get superpowers, whatever my superpowers are, it's going to be like Paul the Great or something.
Well, I have the gray in the temples now if I let my hair grow out, so maybe I could get away with it, but...
I'm going straight from gray in the temples to gray all over, so
no, what do I me know? Too. Yeah, if I let my beard grow out, it'd be like, ooh, nope, can't do that, because the sides and jowls are white. So.
Well, we use it as a means to make my wife feel guilty, because when we started dating, my hair was much darker. You know, well, so we say it's all her fault. It has nothing to do with the years that have gone by. It's just her
fault. It's not the years, honey. It's the mileage.
That's right.
No, I enjoyed this issue too. I'm having a great time rereading these. I think once we finally get through with all these, I'm going to have to track down all the one-off appearances because, I know that they're out there. I don't know if it's the same exact Sleepwalker in all of them. I know when he showed up at the end of the Fantastic Four, Volume 3 or 4, whatever, a couple of years ago, it's him and Rick Sheridan. But So, I mean, I guess we got to grade it, right?
And just as a thought on that, though, is I agree. And I think, you know, we really got to try and do it more often, because I'd like to get through this series in less than 20 years.
Well, let's make it happen, Cap'n.
There you go.
I'm home from work at 3:30 every day, so most days. Okay. So.
And I am semi-retired now, so.
I'd like to be semi-retired, but I need more than semi-money, so there you go. All right, so, yeah, let's cover. Cover's pretty awesome. Like this cover a lot. It's just, I mean, it's two figures and a lot of light and a lot of color, but geez, if it doesn't grab your eye, yeah, I mean, other than Slabby Sleepwalker, I mean, it's pretty good. I'd give it a solid B. It would make me want to buy it off the rack. Interior art is it's the same problem that we've had with pretty much every issue of Sleepwalker. It is inconsistent. Anytime that there's weird, wild stuff going on, I dig it, even though Sleepwalker is, like I said, totally malformed in a lot of panels. I don't know if I'd give the interior art as high of a grade as the cover. So C+, which is, you know, it's close. And story, that's a solid B+ for me there, because I knew that I wanted to see what happened to Rick and Sleepwalker right after I read it. And I had to wait a whole 30 days. So there you go.
Overall?
Overall, let's give it a solid B.
Okay. I'm going to say a B+ on the cover. I think it's really solid. It's catchy. The Slabby Sleepwalker doesn't really turn me off on the cover, because he's not, except for his biceps, he's not really overly done that way. So I'm kind of cool with that. So I'm going to say a B+ on the cover. The interior art, I totally agree with you. And the inconsistency of the physicality of Sleepwalker is really my biggest problem. You know, the anatomy in general is not great, but it's not doesn't bother me, except for on him. So it is a step down. I'm gonna agree with you, I'm gonna say a C+. It's good, but it's just not as good as it could be.
Even the FF doesn't look super great at the end of it. And it's like, come on, there's been character sheets for those guys for 30 years by that point. Like, you should be able to nail them. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I think what he's trying to do is I think he's trying to fit them into the universe that he's creating.
Fair enough.
So I'm giving him that. Like, his thing is the one who really looks particularly different. So for that reason, I'm going to say he's trying to fit him in, and that's okay. But again, you know, C+, it's good, but it's not, you know, could be better. The story, I thought it was thought-provoking for reasons that we discussed. I also feel like, you know, I want to see what's going to happen to Rick, and I want to see what's going to happen to Sleepwalker, and I want to see what's going to happen with the FF. So it made me want to get the next issue and get to it before 2 years goes by.
Okay.
I'm going to give the story a B+. I think it was really solid and made me, you know, again, made me think. So overall, I'm going to, like you, I'm going to give the issue a solid B. I think it's really, you know, very enjoyable, and I look forward to the next one.
Yeah, you see it in a quarter bin, grab it. You could probably get all these for a quarter each. Probably less.
I don't know about quarter bins anymore, because I just don't find quarter bins anymore, except for on, like, Free Comic Book Day. Sometimes I'll find an occasional quarter bin. But for the most part now, it's $1 bins.
Fair enough. You can get the whole series for about $35 then.
Yeah, and I pretty much filled in the entire, because I didn't have any of these issues when you first started running this one by us. And I have all of them now, and I don't think I've spent more than $1 on any of them.
That's the way to do it.
Including the, the Sleepwalker Christmas special?
The annual, I think it was an annual special. Oh, you know what? Let me grab it. Let me see what it was. I think it was a holiday special.
It was a holiday special. Yeah, they you wouldn't call it a Christmas special, because that would be secular.
No, it wouldn't be secular. It would be religious. It's calling it a holiday special makes it secular.
Right, okay, I'm getting it wrong. Yeah, it's a holiday special. And I don't know where that came. That came out in 93.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that falls in relation to the series.
I think you can read it anywhere. Series I might actually have a where it falls in line in the.
The last issue of the series is dated February of 1994, so it was while the series was still ongoing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if we get to the point where that was published in between, we'll just hit on it when it was, you know, in publication order.
You got it.
So, as I like to do often, I figured let's go for a theme of a sort. So I tried to go with the sleep thing.
Yes, you did.
And I picked Justice League of America number 154, which has a cover date of May of 1978. It's got a really... my screen went blank for a second. There we go. It's back. Has a really cool Mike Kaluta cover, which shows Dr. Destiny in the background looking over Superman, Green Arrow, and Batman, saying your struggles are in vain, Justice Leaguers, for I am Dr. Destiny, and it's my decree. I'll kill you in your dreams. Very thought-provoking as far as I'm concerned on the cover. Yeah. The story, which is called I'll Kill You in Your Dreams, is written by Jerry Conway, penciled by Dick Dillon, inked by Frank McLaughlin, colored by Jerry Serpy, lettered by Ben Oda. And I'm going to give you the synopsis from the DC Wiki because I'm lazy. And because, to pull back the curtain a little bit, Chris and I had planned to do this episode about 3 months ago, and I was ready to just give you the synopsis off the top of my head. And 3 months have gone by, so I reviewed it again, but I'm not in synopsis mode. So the synopsis on the DC Wiki is 6 Justice League members are on hand in their civilian identities for the opening of the ultra-modern Gotham Starscraper Hotel, unaware that Dr. Destiny has turned it into a trap for them. As they sleep, he inflicts Flash, the Atom, Superman, Batman, Green Arrow, and Black Canary with dreams in which the use of their powers brings disastrous consequences. Superman's battle with Luthor results in Jimmy Olsen's death. Batman finds himself becoming a winged freak, a true Batman. Flash's fight with the Trickster ends with his exile in space. The Atom's uniform begins to shrink uncontrollably and strangle him. Black Canary's sonic cry causes a building to collapse on her, and Green Arrow is blinded by his own flare arrow. The next day, the heroes find their dreams being duplicated in real life, but they escape their various perils and corner Destiny at his hotel hideaway. Dr. Destiny, once a normal-appearing human, now resembles a living skeleton, a result of having lost the ability to dream. After a psychiatrist caused him to lose his previous power to warp reality through dreams, he now tries to use his new Ruby Materiapithecon device to destroy the League members with illusions. But the miniaturized Atom takes control over the invention and turns it against the villain. I kind of dug this story. I thought this was pretty cool. Again, I really got a kick out of the cover. I just thought this was, you know, it's atypical for superhero fare. You know, it's more like a dreamscape type drawing. So I like that.
Yeah, more like a House of Mystery cover, you know?
Yeah. Only with superheroes on it. Yeah. The interior art, I've disagreed with Scott on occasion. I like Dick Dillon's art. I've always gotten, you know, a kick out of it. He's not, you know, at the top level, but I always thought he was very solid. I liked his superhero work. Kind of like Kurt Swan plus.
I mean, it's serviceable. I mean, it's not hard to follow. So.
He's a cross between Kurt Swan and Jim Aparo.
Okay, I can see that. Yeah.
And that's, you know, to me, that's two of the artists that I grew up reading their work, or, you know, looking at their work. And so I guess I have a comfort level with it. I do think he could have done a much better job on the Starscraper Hotel of Tomorrow. Yeah. I think it could have looked a little more bland. Fancy. It's not only is it bland, but it looks like it's physically, the perspective on it doesn't look really all that good. It's got to have the geodesic dome in there, you know. it's The hotel or the helicopter landing pad seems to be exceptionally small. I think it should have been a full page spread, and it should have looked just more futuristic than it does. But other than that, I didn't really have much criticism in the way of the art. The story I thought was pretty cool. The argument between Green Arrow, or between Oliver Queen rather, and Dinah Lance feels very real. It's like a silly thing that they both have their own perspective on, and they're arguing over which they really didn't, you know, neither of them needed to make a point of arguing that point, and yet they do. So that feels like a real, you know.
Well, I mean, that's kind of in keeping with Ollie at the time. He could be a dink. So,
well, he's being a dink because he's being very, very old fashioned, and she's being a dink because she's getting upset that they had a bachelor party without the women there. So I kind of feel they're both being dinks in their own way.
Yeah.
And they're both like not willing to let it go. The party that they had, I thought was kind of cool, where, you know, they're dancing on these anti-gravity discs, which has got to be an insurance nightmare.
Oh God. I was saying the same thing. Like, you wouldn't get my white behind up on one of those. Jeez.
All of a sudden, you do something and it tilts towards you.
I mean, that's one of the few things you really can't fight as a human being is gravity.
There you go. I thought another just artistic choice that I didn't think was as good as it could have been was they talk about a robot maid, and they showed these two clamp kind of things coming out and making the bed. I thought it could have been something more futuristic looking there as well.
Well, there's like futuristic something going on at the party in the background. You can see, you know, their android, you know, automaton shaped things going on, but I don't know. Maybe it's to denote the fact that they're doing just the menial stuff. I don't know.
So I got a kick out of when they all, you know, when the party is over and they all go to their own rooms. There's a conversation between Palmer and Gene Loring about, oh, when we're married, we could get a room together.
Well, comics code.
Yeah, and yet I think. I they never say it, but I assume that Oliver Queen and Dinah Lance are in the same room. In fact, they are in the same apartment later in the story. Clark Kent is sleeping with pajamas with his Superman costume on underneath them.
You don't?
Well, I do, but that's, I'm a geek. I always thought he was cool.
Well, look, I mean, I understand that he could get changed in the blink of an eye if he wanted to, but, I mean, why bother? Just have it ready to go.
When we go to the faux nightmares, Batman's nightmare isn't really shown as being all that, you know, like, okay, he becomes like Man-Bat, you know, okay, you know, nothing bad actually happens, though.
Well, because this is when it started. This is when it started with Batman is the most amazing character ever and he can do no wrong.
Shouldn't it be in the 70s? But shouldn't it be, you know, like Superman's, where he accidentally kills somebody, or where he gets killed trying to save somebody, or something? Shouldn't his nightmare be more like that?
His mind is too focused. I mean, every version of Batman that's come out in like the last 30 years has basically been Lego Batman, where Batman is the only one who's ever had a good idea and never does anything wrong.
Yeah, and I love the character of Batman, but I hate that aspect of it.
I
like when we go to issues where they show him as fallible.
I do too. Yes, it should have been the Joker killing the entire Bat family, or there's a million other things they could have done. But no.
So they give us a pretty good background on Dr. Destiny. They have like one page that's the entire.
Yeah,
flashback of his 1, 2, 3. It looks like 5 appearances or 4 appearances prior to this, and you know he gives you his, you know, he just kind of monologues and gives them his history. So I thought that was kind of cool because, you know, I always liked, you know, when you'd have your asterisks and you'd have your footnotes that tell you how we got to this point.
Agreed. This had to have been a key issue for some of the guys doing the Justice League cartoon, because, I mean, they kind of do a pretty close adaptation of this as one of the two or three parters early on in the Justice League cartoon from the early 2000s.
And I've seen all of those, but I don't have a specific recollection of that one, so I may have to seek that out again.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I think they pulled Zatanna into it, but they gave her her superhero 70s, 80s costume in the episode. But yeah, they had the couple episodes with John Dee and what he does to the league. So yeah.
Ultimately, they let Black Canary be the one who punches out Dr. Destiny, and I'm kind of cool with that. I don't really have a problem with it. Another one of the autistic things that I just, you know, chuckle at a little bit, just because it just seems so unrealistic to me, is when they show them suiting up to go out. she just pulls the wig on over her hair.
Yeah.
Like, I never worn a wig, but I got to.
Oh, you're missing out.
Yeah, I'm sure I am. But I think you got to at least put your existing hair, you know, tie it up somehow, put it in a net somehow, and just pull another thing over it.
It hasn't been an issue for me the last couple of times I've worn one since it started bicking my head. But yeah, if you have any hair, it needs to be prepared before you put a wig on.
And I don't know why that in particular stood out to me, because it's not something that I would normally particularly care about. So I guess, you know, this whole thing, the killing them in their dreams, it's exactly what it is, but it's like a combination of dreams and reality and this, you know, unless I missed it, they don't really give us an explanation for how this thing makes dreams into reality. They just say, yeah, you know, he has his ruby mesterpeter on, and that's what does it.
That's fine. I mean, you got to look at it at the time. I don't need a whole big background on that either. He's a master planner type villain with gadgets. I mean, once you buy into that, it's fine. I buy into Batman being a guy with no superpowers who puts on a leotard and beats the crap out of people. So
I don't buy Batman being a guy who puts a leotard on and can beat Superman in a fight 9 times out of 10.
No. If Batman has kryptonite, sure, great, fine. All Superman needs to do is zap away at the speed of sound and use X-ray vision to pinpoint where Bruce is and laser him.
Yeah, that would pretty much do it.
That would do it.
So that's something that, you know, they've developed that trope, and I know I've gone off on this before, so that, you know, people have heard
me. Because he's Batman.
But you know, this fact that he can't lose just bothers me.
And look, I love Batman being prepared. And I love the fact that in the comics, he doesn't have like super mesh under armor stuff on his costume. He's literally just a guy with the utility belt and his wits and his muscles. And that's why he's so awesome in the comics. And I don't think we'll ever actually get that in any sort of movie, but I would like to. I mean, I don't need Lucius Fox going, yeah, we developed this for the military and it'll stop anything but a straight shot. I'm like, I don't care. I've already bought into the premise.
Yeah, well, I know at the True Freaks Network, we've had some debate over the validity of those films. I enjoy them, so I'm good on that. But again, I would like to see Batman presented in comics and in live action as the detective.
I say that every time I watch anything Batman related with Maureen, and I go, oh, look, he's doing something detective-y.
Yeah, that's supposed to be one of his biggest, you know, put in quotations, superpowers, is that he's the world's greatest detective. He's the Sherlock Holmes of the superhero set. But more often than not, I think the writers fail on that. And I don't know why.
Because it's hard to write mysteries and detective stories and be smarter than the reader, I think, is part of the problem. And look, I like when it's him going after deranged clowns and punching them too, you know? But you can have some breadcrumbs that he has to follow before he gets there.
Yeah. It doesn't, you know, as the writer, and I am not a writer, but as the writer, you already know what the villain's doing.
Yeah.
So you can choose to figure out what sort of clues that villain left behind that Batman is going to key onto. So you don't have to be as smart as Batman to find the clues because you already know what the villain is doing.
That would take too long.
But let's you just have to be creative.
Let's just have Batman have a secret compartment in his brain with another Batman personality. Let's just do that. That's easier because that requires no thought.
I guess. And we've gone off on a rant here with the
Batman
stuff but that isn't really in the story.
I've been watching a lot of Batman media lately. I even gave the Pattinson Batman another shot, and I enjoyed it more. But, I can't put any live-action Batman at an A. There's no live-action Batman that I can put in at an A.
We've been doing some Batman stuff on Is It Yours, and we will be getting to the Nolanverse shortly.
God help you all.
We've finished with, Batman and Robin, and then we haven't presented it yet, but we've recorded Mask of the Phantasm. We're going to do the Return of the Joker from Batman Beyond. And then
it's so good.
And then we're going to get to the Nolanverse. And I'll tell you in advance, the first two Nolanverse movies, I enjoyed a great deal.
I enjoyed Begins a great deal because it was a lot of promise on the table there. I'm like, all right, if you're going to give me super realistic Batman, let's see where you take it. And then it was just, oh, okay, you made Heat with Batman, and I didn't like Heat, so this sucks.
Right, well, we're going to see. We are going to see because I'm going to rewatch each of them, and we're going to get to them on Is It Yours.
And then they got to that last one where it was just like, oh, my name's Robin. It's like, screw you. I'm done. Yeah.
I can tell you up front, I hated that particular comment. Why don't you use your real name? I didn't like that. But anyway, back to this story. I thought it was pretty cool. This, I was saying I like the artwork, but I'm just looking like on page 23 when Superman punches Luthor. It's one of the things about comic art that I find myself looking at more often than not. And it's one of the things that when I've tried to emulate artists and draw, I've failed at miserably, is when you show somebody throwing a punch, I want to feel the energy of the punch itself. I want to see the body in a position where it looks like they really did something. Yeah. Here, and I'll grant the fact that it's Superman punching somebody without superpowers, so he can't really put his whole body behind it, or he'll just turn the guy's skull into dust. But it looks like there's no kinetic energy behind that punch.
Yeah. And you have to decide as the artist too, am I going to show the windup, the impact, or the after effect? Or am I going to show all three in sequence? And if you're only going to show one of them, then you better make damn sure that we've gotten the whole sequence in our head.
Well, in this one, we effectively have the after of the punch because his fist is already beyond him. But we also have the sound effect, which gives us the punch itself in the same panel.
When Superman needs to hold back, right? I don't know why. If I was the artist, I'd be he's just going to flick his finger at the guy.
That's what I was just thinking.
Like, why? If all I'm going to do is just give you a tab, I'm just going to flick you with my finger. But I don't know. It doesn't look as cool, I guess.
There was an issue that Dave and I covered not too long ago of Superman where that's exactly what he does. The guy thinks he has a piece of kryptonite. It was the part of the kryptonite Nevermore story. And, Superman, after he debunks the kryptonite thing, then he just takes his finger and flicks the guy. And that's enough to take him out. And I thought that was very cool. But I guess that's pretty much what I have on this issue, unless you have anything else.
No, I had a good time reading this. I like any time stuff gets kind of weird like this, and seeing what scares the Justice League, according to this writer, is interesting. I mean, the stuff with Ray Palmer, that kind of makes sense. It's like, oh, what's my one power? I can shrink and grow. Oh, boy, here's a shrinking that I can't stop. So what can I do? I mean, that's kind of logical. Black Canary, same thing. Like, really, the only thing that really doesn't make sense is Batman.
Yeah, it doesn't, because there should be something that he's terrified of, and it shouldn't be becoming a real bat.
And I got to say this. Look, the fact that the Trickster got rid of the Flash in his dream with a nuclear-powered banana peel, That is right up my alley, sir. That is right up my alley.
Yeah, I'll give you that one too.
I liked it.
So I think this is a really, really solid cover, and I'm going to give it an A. I just love it. The interior art, again, kind of the Jim Aparo, Kurt Swan, wanting to be Neil Adams artwork, which I think is good. I like it. But, you know, it's a B. It's not great. It's good. The story, I really like the story, except for the one thing that we've pointed out with the Batman thing. And then just some of the tropes in there about, we could have our own room when we get married. We're like 35 years old, but we can't have a room together at this point in our lives, which is just silly to me. Other than that, and the fact that this is, you know, supposed to be meant read by, you know, people who are younger, and the Comics Code Authority won't approve anything at all. So I'm going to say the story itself, it made me, I really enjoyed reading it. So I'm going to say a B on the story as well. And overall, I'm going to give it a B+, buoyed by the cover.
All right. Yeah. The cover is pretty awesome. I wouldn't mind having that as a, you know, that print on a tin plate hung up, or a print. But again, I kind of like darker and horror related stuff. So, I'd go a solid B on that. I don't know if I could do B+, but yeah, definitely a solid B. Interior art, I had no trouble following it. It was easy to follow. It's not my favorite art style. It's almost house style. Which is fine, because I could pick out who everybody was and I didn't get anybody confused. I'm not going to go as high as you. I'd probably go C+. And the story, I had a great time reading the story. That's a solid B+. I mean, overall, I guess that's a B+ issue for me. And your hangups with it are probably not my hangups with it. And again, right, you know, superpowered banana peel, that kind of almost has given it a half a grade in and of itself. So.
You know, just I'm paging through all we're talking over and over again. And the one thing I would say artistically, and this is a problem I know Marvel has had with like Steve Rogers and Hank Pym and Clint Barton.
Anybody that's blonde looks the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they show Dinah Lance in her civilian look at the, you know, when she's having the argument with Oliver Queen, she's interchangeable with
Wonder Woman
right there. Yeah. And that's I don't know if that's so much the artist's fault, because I think the character models are so similar that it's difficult to differentiate them, especially if they're not. If you're going to differentiate them, I think you need to have them both in the book at the same time. So you could say, there's the differences.
That's fair enough. And again, I mean, this is also still of the time when guys were cranking out, you know, finished art in, you know, 10 days. So it's the time factor as well. Yeah, I'm sure if there was another main female next to her, we would have been able to tell the difference, either hairstyle or lips or nose or something.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's unfair to criticize that in a vacuum. Like I said, if the both characters were in here and you couldn't tell which was which, then it's more legit.
And I do like the design of Dr. Destiny. I think that's a great horror themed character. Again, you put a skull on somebody's face, I mean, you know, you're kind of getting what they're about immediately. I mean, I think Skeletor is one of the best designed villains of the 80s.
And this is very similar to Skeletor in look. Yep. So, yeah, I agree with you. So I guess that's going to be it now. It's totally on me to get you to do the next Sleepwalker issue before 2 years goes by like this time. We'll try and get this done reasonably soon.
Let's do it. And again, I like, you know, if there's other stuff, we don't have to always do Sleepwalker. I like other funny books, you know.
And I like having you on to do other funny books, but I want to get moving on this Sleepwalker
thing. Okay, fine. We're not getting any younger.
That's exactly right. So we're gonna try and coax Chris back here soon. And I don't think it'll take too much coaxing. So thanks, Chris, for coming on and doing this with me.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to me drone on. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
All right.
All right.
Cool deal.
Cool.